Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 4th day of May. Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your podcast. Yes, it's the 4th of May. May the 4th be with you. It's a special edition of the show. Got a really great show ahead, actually. All the other ones suck. I love it when somebody says, we got a great show for you today. Like, yeah, I was just phoning it in last week. Just didn't really give a damn. But now I've decided to put in some effort. It is about a year ago, I guess, he says, last summer. I got an email just a couple of days ago from somebody who's living in China, listens to the podcast, lives in China, splits his time between China and Virginia, but you can't really do that anymore. So right now he's in China, and offered to talk about the perspective of what's going on from China. And I thought, that sounds interesting, that sounds intriguing, but I wanted to make sure that this guy, name is Paul, last name withheld, so he isn't thrown into a gulag. I was kind of wanted to gauge his level of comfort in speaking in a way that's critical of the Chinese government. And I don't know how China works. I just guess how China works. And I'm not really sure how free anybody is to talk over the internet. I imagine they monitor everything. And he said, no, he's fine. He can say whatever he wants. And I figured, what the hell? I'll talk to him, record it. And if it sucks, I just won't air it. But it didn't suck. You didn't suck, Paul. Congratulations. So it ended up going about 55 minutes, 53 minutes, something like that. Covered everything. It's a really interesting perspective to get what an American sees over there. And he can understand the language, can speak it a little bit, but he's not by any means fluent. So you get a flavor of what the media is like and how the media is viewing the outbreak, the United States, the president, things like that. We get into all of it. I think you will. It's something I haven't seen or heard anywhere. So I was interested, and I think you'll be interested as well. And I appreciate Paul reaching out to me and saying, hey, I'm over here. And he proved it. He sent me like pictures of documents and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you really are over there. So it's very cool. And that's one of the great things about doing a podcast and having people listen to the podcast and getting feedback is you never know where people are listening from or where there's some weird countries and looking at some of the data, the limited data that I have access to. And it's like, who in the hell in this country is listening to the podcast? But Americans live everywhere. Now, I don't care how I get into your routine. I just care that I'm in your routine. And I thank you for that. So thanks to Paul for listening. And thanks to Paul for thinking it would be an interesting conversation. And he was correct. But before we get to that, got to tip our hats to our sponsor. You know, if you're sitting there, you're dragging butt, you're sitting there going, I don't have as much energy as I used to, especially with all the garbage we're eating during lockdown. And God knows it's the first time I've ever eaten by expiration date. That's where you need something like Life Change Tea. You go to getthetea.com. You order the Life Change Tea or any of their other fine products. And you find, if you use as directed, that your system starts to clean itself out, shall we say. It is the tea that makes you go. Then you get more energy. And how does that work, Derek, you say? Well, it's because your body is now cleaned out and can absorb the nutrition better from the food that you consume. That's right. Your body is kind of, imagine it's a wall with a whole bunch of pictures on it, shall we say, to put it in polite terms. Well, you can't really see all of the wall because it's covered in pictures, picture frames. Well, if your wall is what absorbs the nutrition, you're getting a lot of spaces where you can't absorb it. That means by the time it moves to the end, a lot of the nutrition has not been absorbed. You wipe clean the wall, get rid of those old pictures, treat it like an old breakup. You go, throw away all those pictures. Then there's all that wall to absorb nutrition. That's what Life Change Tea does. You go to getthetea.com, check your order, decide what you want, and then enter promo code Derek at checkout. Click apply. You get free, fast shipping. You can't beat the deal, and you'll start feeling better almost immediately. It's amazing how quickly this stuff works and how well it works. Use as directed. Don't overdo it. Not that you don't have the time right now, but you don't want to spend an inordinate amount of time on the toilet. Use as directed, and you will see a difference. GetTheTea.com. Okay. As he described himself as an unpaid foreign correspondent, the first one ever, we haven't had anybody paid on the program, but we don't have anybody who works on the program, except for maybe Quinn. And she demands a talent fee paid in Barbies. So what are you going to do? Without any further ado, I give you Paul in China. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as we've been doing on the program for the last, I don't even know how long this thing has lasted, we've been talking to people around the country, getting their sense of what things are like, where they are, and their perspectives. And this time's a little different. We're going to the exact opposite side of the globe, judging by the fact that it's a 12-hour time difference. We're joined by a listener, a first listener of the podcast, just going by the name Paul. It's not McCartney, unfortunately. No offense to this Paul, but Paul is in China. He's in Shanghai, and he's been there throughout this thing. So I thought it would be very interesting to get an American perspective of the coronavirus pandemic from China. So welcome, Paul. Thanks for taking the time and staying up late.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, yeah, it's not like I found you. You found me, so thank you. You did all the legwork here. I'm just talking. So first of all, how does an American find themselves in China for extended periods of time?
Well, I have a long history. I've worked about 35 years in sort of specialty construction, and I've worked all over the globe. I've worked in Europe, and I've worked in Japan, and I worked in China from 2013 to 2016, and I was invited to come and work on a project here, actually in Beijing, and I've been here since last August. And so I took the offer. I enjoy China, and so I came. I've been here since then, and everything was great until this thing hit, and it's really rocked the whole world.
Before we get into what you've seen and what you've experienced, I gotta know: is bat delicious or what?
Oh God, I would never eat
you,
that.
Could you go to those? Do you go to those wet markets and see weird things that are, people are eating?
Yeah, you do see all sorts of strange stuff. You can see sautéed cockroaches. You can see all sorts of stuff that I would never eat.
Well, I actually have a pretty cockroach. Otherwise, it's a waste of time.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you do see that stuff. I've never seen bat, but I've actually seen all. I mean, I've seen there are areas where they will eat dog. They will eat cats. They will eat the things that, you know, all the stereotypes. They will absolutely eat that.
Culture shock is that like when you see somebody eating something you might have had as a pet growing up?
It's still a culture shock, and actually, to be honest, a lot of Chinese are actually shocked by it as well. It's a cultural thing here. There's a like in Shanghai, for example, there's a time of the month where they believe like eating a dog is actually lucky, and so they'll go out and try to find animals like that and eat it for that 1 week. And so you have to bring your pets in and watch them.
You know, I'm nervous about talking to you because, you know, you never know that prying ears are listening when you're dealing with a communist country. But I just got to say that the Chinese culture, parts of it, I imagine, I hope it's shrinking. But the people who kill tigers and rhinoceroses because they think it'll make their dick hard or bigger or whatever, and you eat a cat during a special week and it'll make it's the 21st century. Are we still not to the point where we can go, this is nothing, this is hocus pocus, you know? An apple a day doesn't keep the doctor away, and eating a cat is not going to bring you good luck throughout. You ate a cat last year. Did you have good luck this year? As if you didn't, you know, I think you wouldn't go back to that well. But that's neither here nor there. It's just something that always drives me nuts. And I see these footage of the rhinoceros who had the horn
cut off and they just left it to die. It's because some asshole in Asia somewhere thinks that this is going to add 2 millimeters to their dick or 5 seconds to their lasting during sex. And it's like, it's just so freaking stupid. Anyway, that's me, Beijing, not Paul. So you find yourself, when was the first, well, I don't want to get you in trouble, but I'm perfectly happy to be in trouble with the Chinese. You're over there. When do you get the first inkling that there's something, because you're not in Wuhan. When is the first time you get a sense that something's going on? So I imagine the media is pretty controlled. First, how much access to U.S. media you have? We're talking through Skype right now. You have internet access, obviously, but do you, can you go to any website you want?
It's sort of variable. Typically, most Americans and actually most Chinese who are kind of on the hip side have VPNs, virtual, private networks, and they can. Everybody knows that if they get a VPN on their phone or their computer, you can access Western media, and most people actually do. And they recognize, to be honest, most of the people do recognize that there's a difference between basically the Chinese state-controlled media and the more freer Western media. Although I have to say, I don't think the Western media is all that great either.
No.
It's controlled. It just has to be very slanted as well. So my first inkling of it was, it's hard for Americans to understand this, but Chinese New Year, basically all of China basically runs around Chinese New Year, and it's not a day; it's basically a month. Technically, it's a week, but what they do is they combine the Chinese New Year with another holiday called Little Year and another holiday called the Lantern Festival. And so, in this time period, it's basically similar to the way the Europeans act in August, where you basically in August, the month of August, you can't get anything done. It's very similar in China. So basically the last week in January and into the February, for that 4 to 5 weeks, the production here slows down. And so just prior to Chinese New Year, I actually went back to Virginia, where I'm from, and visited the family for Chinese New Year. And while I was over there, back in the U.S., I was hearing inklings of what was going on. When I came to the U.S., all they asked me at immigration when I came back to the U.S. is, was I carrying chocolate? They didn't ask me for anything.
Were you?
That was it. And then I was not carrying chocolate. But they did ask me, once I got into the U.S., I started noticing that there was, stuff going on in China. And then it started getting crazier and crazier. And then they started canceling flights and all this other stuff. And so the position I'm in China, I realized I had to get back there. I basically lose my job. So I had a prepaid ticket to go back to China on February 2nd. And I was hearing that, that all the airlines are basically canceling flights from about February 4th or February 5th on. And they wouldn't basically reinstate that ticket until April. So I figured I had to go back. And so I did. I went back. And when I went back, it was a soft quarantine. I think the way that the U.S. is basically in right now, there was a soft quarantine in Beijing. They had locked down Wuhan and basically the province of Hubei province. They had blocked that area down. And then the other areas were under a soft quarantine. So I came back into a soft quarantine. The one thing that was nice about it is when I flew back on my plane, the international plane to China, there was about 50 people on it, typically packed. I was the only foreigner on the plane. I breezed into the immigration. I got through immigration, got a taxi, and went down to Beijing in the Chaoyang district, which is the CBD, the central Beijing business district, in about 30 minutes, which is it was unheard of. I mean, typically take you 2 to 3 hours to do. So I breezed in there.
As a guy who's as an American who's in the United States, sees that there's a pandemic going on, and I understand your job is there, but isn't there a part of you that goes, do I really want to go back? I get the you want your job thing, but you're kind of going back into, I guess it wasn't really known. It was actually more unknown at that point. You didn't know what you were going back into, except that something was going on. What's going through your head is you're looking at flights going, I got to get back there so I don't lose my job. And you're hearing reports of a pandemic. Most people would go, thank God I'm home. Screw my job.
Well, I don't know. Call me crazy. But I kind of figured it would do the same thing it did, earlier viruses like the H1N1 and SARS. It would basically make the rounds around the globe but I figure I'm no safer in the United States than I would be in China. So I just went for it. Call me crazy, but I went for it, and you know, and nothing's happened. I have friends of mine who live in Wuhan. I had a former translator of mine who lived in Wuhan and was basically locked down the entire time. You know, she doesn't know a single person with the virus, doesn't know anybody who's died of the virus. And to be honest, I don't know a single person here who's had the virus, who knows anybody who's had the virus, who knows anybody who's died who's had the virus.
It's kind of, I mean, there's, you know, 1.5 billion people over there, but did you, when you got back there and you were under soft quarantine in Shanghai or in Beijing or wherever you said, I forget where you said it was,
Beijing,
were you getting, what was the Japanese or Chinese media like? You said you told me off air that you don't speak Chinese, but you can understand it pretty well. So I imagine you watch some of the local news or what have you. Did you get a sense of what was going on? Did you feel comfortable with the sense you were getting? And how did that compare with what you were seeing in Western media online?
So what we got from the Chinese media was that, and it's pretty brutal over here. You know, I mean, if they want to lock down, they lock down, and you don't have any rights here whatsoever. I mean, it's they clamp down extremely hard on Wuhan. And the crazy thing about Chinese New Year is the whole country's predicated around it. So when the virus was understood to basically emanate from Wuhan at that point, Wuhan's a city of about 11 million people. Again, it's a tier one city, which is, means it's a number one, like the top 11 cities in China. 11 million people live in that city. 6 million of them had already left Wuhan, and they had visiting family and friends throughout China. So there were only 5 million people when they locked the city down. So 6 million of them had already gotten out of the city, were visiting relatives and friends throughout the country. And that's probably the reason why the virus did spread outside of Wuhan. And so because of that, people started to lock down and started to become a soft quarantine. And at least in Beijing, when I was there, there was nothing open except grocery stores and basically critical internal services like electrical power, police, medical and food services. That was it. That was the only thing that was open.
It's a lot like here right now in most states, although some are starting to reopen. What's it like now? Is it back to more normal?
It is back to more normal. The weird part, and I don't know if the Americans know this, but about 3 weeks of soft quarantine happened throughout the country. And then after 3 weeks, they decided to open the country back up and allow travel. And travel was actually pretty hard for a foreigner. If you can travel, but to travel here, you have to have a cell phone that has all the apps that gives you a health code. But to have the health code, you have to be registered with the health department in China. And to have that registration is very, very tough. And so you have to have these apps that allow you to have access. And so that's a tough thing. I was able to get those apps and allow me to travel to both Shanghai and then Xiamen. And Xiamen's down in South China. So I was able to travel. And during that travel, that's when the virus started to spike in Italy and Spain. And at that same time, they started to have a spike in Beijing. And so what they did is they did a complete lockdown, and they basically banned all travel into China, which is still going on today, from all foreigners. And so the crazy thing about it is basically what was going on is the government was saying that the spike in cases was caused by foreigners. And what it actually was Chinese nationals, expats who lived abroad, coming back to China feeling it was more safe to be back in China than it would be in, say, Italy or Spain or the United States. They came back and they actually brought the virus, but they blamed the government, not the people, but the government blamed the foreigners on the new spread, the second wave on foreigners. And so what we started to see is a huge backlash against anybody who's not Chinese. And that is actually still going on today. If you're a Chinese national, you could get a hotel, you can get a plane flight, you can do anything you want. But if you're foreigner, I'm banned still today from a lot of hotels. I can't go in certain restaurants, can't buy food for certain stores. I mean, and I'm blonde and big, and I can't shade and fade in China.
We've seen footage that I imagine the Chinese Communist government doesn't allow to be circulated over there. People in Wuhan in particular, being their doors being nailed shut from the outside by the authorities. And according to reports over here, you know, a couple weeks later, they come back and everybody's dead inside, either from the virus or because they didn't have food or whatever. They're basically being imprisoned in their own homes and their own apartments. How was what did you see out of Wuhan during this? Was it getting the kind of coverage it was getting that we're getting here, or what was it like? What was the official communist line?
So I think there's a little bit of misconception. I think some of that's probably true, and I think some of that's not true. I think what's going on is they have rules over there, and basically, if you don't follow them, you know, if you're an old, you know, 70-year-old woman, you're walking to the market, you're not wearing a mask, and you don't comply with the government, they just start pounding on you, literally, like grab you, put your arms behind your back, and drag you off to a truck. And when you see these people complaining, and you see the guys being thrown to the ground, a lot of that's just simply that these women or these guys are just. I'm trying to, you know, do their average day, and it gets interrupted. And then basically being arrested, and or you get come out positive for a temperature check, which they in China they temperature check you everywhere. I mean, anywhere you go, they have a handheld temperature check, and they, you know, check your wrist or your forehead. And if you register as having a fever, you're automatically assumed to have the coronavirus. And if you put up a fight or you do anything like that, they will basically throw you into the brig and assume that you have the coronavirus. And
well, what are you supposed to do if you say you have a temperature of 100.2, they don't, or whatever the equivalent is in Celsius, they don't just start pummeling you. They tell you go home and stay home, and they note who you are and make sure you're staying home. And if you say, but I want to go get a hamburger, then they'll beat the hell out of you. How does that work?
Yeah. The latter of the two. Basically, if you come up as having a fever, they assume the worst. They assume that you have the virus, and here you're guilty until proven innocent. You basically have to go into the quarantine, and they assume that you have the virus. And so that's what a lot of times you see these people like fighting and yelling and screaming, and the authorities pounding on them. That's literally what it is. They may or may not have the virus, but they've assumed to have the virus. And so these people are either trying to plan their day. They don't get to call their kids or their grandkids. And, hey, I'm not coming back because the authorities have arrested me. And I'm going into, you know, lockdown for 14 days. You know, that's a lot of times what you're seeing. But when you see those videos of people being welded into their apartments, that's true. That actually did happen.
And do the Chinese people know about this?
Yes, yes, they know about it. And you really can't do much.
No, I guess you can't. I'm just curious to know the difference. Like, I just assumed a complete media blackout, that they don't tell anybody anything. And you know, China is such a geographically large place that something happening, you know, unless it made national news, I wouldn't know what's going on in Oregon, nor would I probably care. So I'm just curious if it's like that.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. Absolutely true. What you're getting is you're getting home video or people filming with their cameras and they're sending that basically into the internet, and it basically bounces back. You're not seeing that on Chinese media whatsoever.
Are the average Chinese people, without betraying any confidences of the people you know, but do they like their government? Do they trust their government, especially when it comes to this?
To be honest, yes, they do. They actually do. I would say 90% of the people that I think they are very, very proud of how China's handled it. And they believe that they're the model of the world. And they think the government's doing a wonderful job.
Hmm. Now, the closest I've ever come to being in a communist country is living in Maryland. But so it's not that different. But I'm just curious to know, because we have this preconceived notion that there's this all-encompassing oppression in a communist country because, well, you only ever hear about the people who've been disappeared. You hear about the fact that you can't have free speech rights and this, that, and the other thing. But as an American who knows what it's like to live in the United States, are you aware, and how aware are you, of the communist Chinese government? Like, is it like what you read about East Germany back in the 70s and 80s, where you can't really, you got to watch what you say to anybody because you never really know who's going to rat you out? Or what is it like there? What is the atmosphere like?
It's actually very different. I think actually Americans, I think people who've never experienced China might be actually kind of actually blown away by China. It's very, very modern. It's very, very high tech, and it's not, you know, it's not as omnipresent as people might think. I mean, you without a doubt, there's no freedom of the press, and there's no freedom. There's, you know, there is no second party to vote for. There's only one party to vote for. There's only one, you know, there's only one group that you follow. Without a doubt, that's the true. The one thing that sort of sets apart China is that, you know, China is, it's not just a country. It's not just a language. It's a racial group, and they sort of rally around that, and it sort of works for them in a way that it would not work in the United States. But it's the way, I wouldn't call China a communist country. I kind of consider it like a for-profit NGO. It's like the government definitely runs everything, but they have a lot of private enterprise, but it's not truly private. It's sort of subsidized by the government, and very similar in some ways to the U.S. in some departments, you know. You'll see a lot of
kind of we were talking earlier, the private companies who want to do business. It's a huge market, so everybody wants to get a piece of 1.5 billion people. In order to get a piece of that 1.5 billion people, you almost have to enter into a joint operating agreement with the government, where they get their beak wet, probably wetter than yours, where they may own a majority share in what you do, but otherwise, if you don't do it with them, they're going to steal your stuff and do it anyway. So it's better to have a piece of that pie than no pie at all, because somebody's going to eat pie. Paul?
Oh, you cut out a little bit there. Oh, but yeah. Sorry. I think I got the gist of what you're saying. There are no intellectual property right laws here, and I think people are aware of that in the United States. And so, if you're an American company and you come over here, a European company, you come over here, be aware that the Chinese are going to steal your idea, and they're going to rebrand it, remarket it, and put a different name on it, but they're going to take everything that you've created and make a Chinese version of it.
So if, like, I'm trying to figure out back to press freedom for a second. There are a lot of protests in Hong Kong. Still, they've sort of restarted now against the government. Is Hong Kong covered over there?
So if you watch CNN or Fox, you can get all that over here. If they start talking about Hong Kong and they start talking about the government, China government, mainland government here at all in a bad way, your TV will go black. And it'll go black until they stop talking about it, and it'll come back on again. But if you ask the average Chinese person about what they feel about Hong Kong, they say that Hong Kong belongs to China. And so why are these guys, why are they protesting? They don't get it. They don't understand the idea of the 50-year rule that in 2049 this is going to be completely Chinese. They just already feel that it's already part of China, and it's just inevitable, and just kind of suck it up and deal with it.
So there is no, I mean, there is some, but there is no massive freedom movement against the government, against the Chinese communist government. Are they oppressed, and are they aware of the fact that they're oppressed?
They don't feel they're oppressed whatsoever in this country. That is the thing that you get pretty quickly here, is that the Chinese people are actually fairly happy with their lives, to be honest. They don't believe in they don't have in their culture, they don't believe in sort of individualism. It's just not part of their being. The idea of that you're born with inalienable rights, and that you have these rights, that just doesn't exist in their culture. So they don't feel that they're missing it, because they never had it in the first place.
When you first got there, how were you treated as an American? Were you treated with skepticism? Were you treated with you're just another guy, or how does that go?
They have preconceptions of Americans. We're called Uyghurin or Lawai. Uyghurin means alien. Lawai is sort of the local version of Mandarin, which just means the same thing. It just means foreign. And you're treated actually fairly nicely. They have some preconceptions of what they assume Americans are about. They think American cuisine is simply nothing but hamburgers and hot dogs, and we're all fat, basically. That's what they all think.
Not that far off.
That's true.
So, that we hear stories again of especially black people, Africans over there being banned from places, the horrible racism. You can't, no black people allowed in McDonald's, for example. McDonald's had to apologize because of what McDonald's in China was doing. Is that prevalent? Is that something you see?
I've seen it. They have preconceptions of Indian people, Indian being India, you know, they have preconceptions of them that they smell. Black people are dirty. They absolutely have these preconceptions, specifically black Africans from, you know, from Africa, not necessarily Americans, but Africans. They have these preconceptions of them. Absolutely. And they have been basically tossing these immigrants out, even though they have work permits and they've been in the country, they speak the language fluently, they've been here for years. They've just been cleaning out whole areas. And for the most part, what's crazy about this, and I experienced it with what I was speaking about earlier, with the when the Chinese government blamed the foreigners for the uptick in the coronavirus, a huge percentage of the population just accepts the government's view that, yeah, absolutely, you know, these people are the reason why the uptick, you know, happened.
So when you came back from the United States, did people you worked with or know or lived near or whatever, did they kind of stay away from you because, oh, he might have brought it back?
They were okay because I came back early. It was the second wave when I was in Shanghai and I was trying to come back to Beijing. When I came back to Beijing after being in Shanghai, I actually had to go into a lockdown for 2 weeks into my, it was an in-room, basically house arrest in my apartment for 2 weeks. And they put me in that, and they, you know, every 2 hours the police would come and check off that I was still in my room. They sanitized my door. I had to basically they dropped food off and then ran at my door, you know, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
So they provided you with food. Now it was your apartment, right?
My apartment. Yeah, we're paying for it.
They put you in there and said you stay here. You couldn't leave for any reason whatsoever, and every 2 hours, 24 hours a day, they would come by and knock on the door to make sure you were there?
Yep, 24 hours a day. I had a sheet that was taped to my door, and every 2 hours, they would come in and sign off on it, knock, and then make sure I was there. My key card wouldn't work, so if I, you know, it was electronic key, so if I left my apartment and closed the door, it would lock behind me, I wouldn't be able to use it. And that was that went on for 2 weeks.
What would happen to you if you went out? You tried to sneak out?
I don't know. I didn't want to try it, to be honest.
Now, could the food that they brought, did you have a say in that? Or did they just say, here's food, eat it?
Here's food. And to be honest, it wasn't bad. It was a pretty good breakfast and pretty good lunch. And I when I came back the first time from the United States and came back, I actually assumed the worst. And the first time when I landed there, very next day, I stocked up on everything I needed and just put it in the refrigerator, and just assuming the worst. And thank God I had it, because it actually really helped me, because, you know, I'm kind of hip and savvy to a lot of the stuff in Chinese. But if you just arrived in China and you had no prior experience, you didn't have the apps on your phone, you didn't know how to speak, and you didn't have friends, you'd been actually in a lot of trouble. And right now what's going on is if you were to come from Shanghai now and go to some of these areas, you'd be locked into a 21-day quarantine. And it's not a quarantine if you don't have a house. They would actually stick you in a government facility, which is typically a gym. It would look like sort of like the New Orleans after Katrina, you know, when you sit in the dome there.
So is this still ongoing? Is it, because we get reports that, well, China has reopened and China is back in business, and the American media seems to be parroting a lot of Chinese government talking points. But I assume you've seen that. What sense do you get as to how accurate the reporting is here?
So Beijing is the capital, and Beijing has to be safe, right? So the farther away you get from Beijing, the more open it is. So I'm in Shanghai right now. I spent the afternoon walking around. I didn't wear a mask. A lot of people still are wearing masks. But, you know, I was in Xiamen a couple of weeks ago. Again, very open. But you get to Beijing, it's much more closed area. Beijing is supposed to have the meeting of the Communist Party on May 22nd. And the fact that they're actually having the meeting is a sort of a national bellwether that China's actually open for business at that point. And I don't know after that if open up the country to foreigners to be able to come back in. But I expect that to probably happen in mid-June, probably. I don't know what the American media is basically saying, but I personally, in my personal opinion, is the whole thing's overblown. I really think it's overblown. I think the whole thing's overblown in the United States. And I think the whole thing's overblown just internationally. I mean, there's a lot of people who have died from this thing. But I just think, you know, I'm as far as numbers go, I just think it's just on par with the flu. It's not the flu, but it's on par death-wise and with the flu and the H1N1 virus in 2009. I just don't think we have to be doing what we're doing. I'm much, much more impressed with the way Sweden is doing it, to be honest.
Yeah, well, people get to leave their houses there. Now, as far as Wuhan, though, we've been getting conflicting reports. The government says we haven't had deaths here, there's no new cases, so on and so forth. There's a lot of skepticism when those numbers and those reports come out. But is there skepticism within it? Because we see, well, they've ordered, they say 5,000 died, and they've ordered 100,000 urns or something like that. Is there a sense you guys get? Because, you know, when somebody says something here, or our government says something here, some people kind of look at each other and just go, it's a bunch of bullshit. Is there that sense at all? Because we look at what comes out of China as that's a bunch of bullshit. Is there that sense inside China? Do you believe, for example, that things in Wuhan, ground zero for this thing, are all back to normal almost?
I think they're pretty much back to normal. Everybody I know has left that area. They can leave freely now, and they can travel freely. You know, there was sort of a panic within China once the Wuhan people left, when Hubei was open and people could travel. A lot of the other cities sort of here sort of panicked, and they went and clamped down for a couple of days. But after that panic sort of subsided and people realized they weren't getting sick, that all went away.
I just, I'm trying to get a sense of the United States here is very angry at China. The American people are the president. How is President Trump portrayed there? Because every time he talks about Xi Jinping, I'm good friends with him. I like him. He seems to be wanting to maintain a good relationship. When they report on Donald Trump over there, and when Xi Jinping, I don't know if Xi Jinping, I guess he probably doesn't hold press conferences very often, but I imagine he speaks a lot. Is there that sort of deference paid to the American president in return?
You know, Trump is probably viewed here the way the left views him in the United States very similarly. I don't see Xi Jinping on TV that much. I haven't seen him for quite a while, actually. I mean, I know Trump got a lot of blowback for calling this whole thing the China virus, but I don't know if people realize the reason why he did so is that I didn't even know this existed, but in October of 2019, Wuhan hosted the military Olympic Games. Essentially, this is like the elite athletes within the militaries of various countries. They hosted this, and China actually blamed the American military for bringing the virus to Wuhan by basically purposely infecting athletes on the American team and having them come into Wuhan and spread this virus, which absolutely makes no sense. That's what he did. And so when Trump was basically calling it the Wuhan virus, the China virus, he was doing so basically in retaliation to that kind of ridiculous claim. I mean, on its face, it's just ridiculous because if the American athletes had come into Wuhan, they would have affected everybody, all the other athletes, and those athletes would have taken it home, and the virus would have spread in October globally. And it obviously it didn't basically come out of anywhere but Wuhan in early December. So Trump is viewed, I would say, and covered the same way he's covered by the left in the United States.
Are there shows like Rachel Maddow and Tucker Carlson over there, or is it all just no. Straight news readers? Nobody's giving their opinions or anything. So do they call the president a Nazi? Do they call him an idiot? What is the general attitude towards him?
They don't call him a Nazi. They do call him an idiot. There are no independent news voices who give their own personal opinion about what's going on. They absolutely tout the party line without a question. If you want to get that, you have to go online.
You mentioned that you went walking around without a mask. You're allowed to walk around without a mask?
You are allowed to walk around without a mask. I mean, sometimes people will frown on you, but I'm 6'3" and I'm blonde and big and people don't tell me anything. So, but yeah,
over here, you can't, go into a store without a mask. If you go into a store without what percentage of people would you say in the streets of Shanghai are wearing masks?
I would say actually it's probably still fairly high. I mean, what people do is they put it on, you know, they'll take it off and they'll put it down below their chin, you know, and then they'll, when they get to an area where there's a lot of people, they'll pop it back on their face, you know, and then they'll pop it back right back off. I mean, Asia in general is a country, is a culture that wears masks anyways.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever been here, but you know, if you get the flu or the cold, you put a mask on, you know, it's just something they do. So it's not a big deal per se.
One of the big things that we see about China here is because of the population density of the major cities, the air pollution is quite bad. Is that the case?
It is absolutely the case. It is bad. I mean, Beijing is bad. It's gotten a lot better. They just simply moved the production farther west into the Xinjiang province, which is way far west. It's almost in Russia. But yeah, it's definitely gotten better. But I would say, you know, today was not a good day in Shanghai. I think people laugh. I mean, when people tell me, when they, you know, how bad sometimes the U.S. cities are, when you look at the AQMD index for U.S. cities, and if you compare the Chinese cities, it's, you know, it's twice to 10 times higher. I mean, a bad day in the U.S. would be like over 80, I think. You know, that'd be a bad day in the U.S. city. You know, Shanghai, which is considered a sort of progressive city and pretty hip to pollution things, is typically over 120 daily. And I've been here when it's over 200 to 300. Beijing will be 700 to 800 sometimes.
Can you leave your house with that? I mean, the air gets in,
you really don't want to leave your house. I mean, it looks like a cloudy day, like a really overcast day, and it's not clouds or overcast. It's pollution.
It just seems amazing to me. Now, going forward, are you comfortable there? You feel safe? I mean, you're talking to me pretty freely, and I was nervous in setting this up because I didn't, you know, you never know who's again. It's that Stasi mentality of the East German secret police. But you, as an American, you're an outsider, and if an outbreak happened again, the government would have every incentive to blame people like you, even if you've been there for a long time and it couldn't have been you.
Right. Yeah. I don't really fear that, but if it happened, I could probably get out. I'm not worried about getting out so much as basically coming back in if I wanted to work. You know, it's weird. To call China a communist country, it's not really a communist country. I mean, if you actually have been here and if you've ever gone to a market here, these guys are the most capitalistic people you've ever met in your life. I mean, the Chinese people are really into making a dollar or an RMB. They are really into it. You know, it's a very high tech country. I guess the difference between like the East German and the Russians that we remember from the 1980s, 70s, 60s, and the difference between that and China is that, you know, to their credit, and I'm not trying to bolster the Chinese communists at any means, but to their credit, though, they actually do spend the money on the people. The park systems here are beautiful. The roads are beautiful. The transportation systems are amazing. I mean, if you land in Pudong Airport in Shanghai and travel, it's a 50-mile journey between Pudong Airport and downtown Pudong, Shanghai area. It's a 50-mile journey. You can get there in 7 minutes on a maglev train. I mean, it's amazing. And you know, again, the great leap forward means that they got to leap forward and not have to deal with pulling out the old Amtrak system. You know, they don't have the old telephone poles from the 1800s. They don't have this technology because they didn't have it. And you know, they just didn't have any of this technology until the country opened up. And then
a lot of people died in that great leap, though. You know,
right.
Does China? We in the United States obsess about the things our government and our culture has gotten wrong over time. You know, we're still being crucified for things that are 200 years old that nobody alive did and nobody alive was a victim of. China has some internal atrocities. Great Leap Forward, being an example of cultural revolution. Are those sort of memory hold, like we used to hear Germany pretended that history stopped in 1932 and didn't pick up again until 1946? Or do they, is it acknowledged and just kind of said, oh, well, it happened. What are you going to do?
I would, the latter is true. It's very, very much memory hold. They don't really want to talk about it. What they like to do is talk about the Japanese. And, you know, and if you're from Nanjing, you know, they talk about the invasion of Japan during the 1930s. I mean, that's what they don't focus on what they did internally whatsoever.
Now, you are an American. You have been there for a number of years. I imagine, do you know a lot of expats? Do you know a lot of foreigners from Europe and whatever? You mentioned, no matter how long you live there, no matter what you do, you'll never be accepted by the people fully, right?
True. Yeah. Yes. Explain, I mean, you can be what born.
Because like. you swear the oath, you're an American. Doesn't matter if you got an accent, doesn't matter how you got here or how long you've been here. Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah, it's definitely not that here. I mean, that's one of the big stumbling blocks, I think. And I think China actually recognizes it to some extent. But, you know, you could actually be born in China. You know, you could be born here, you could be raised here, you could live your entire life here, you could become completely fluent in Mandarin, you could be read and write the language, you could marry a Chinese person and have half Chinese children, or you could basically grow old, and it doesn't matter. You could be 80 years old and the Chinese people will view you as a foreigner. If you're not an Asian person to begin with, they will view you as a foreigner. So it puts the kibosh on to me. To be truly caring about wanting to become, you know, learn more about the country or become more fluent in the language, it really kind of puts a damper on it, because you don't get accepted. You're always viewed as a foreigner.
Is that true for other Asians? Like Korea? This, I've heard that there's a lot of racism, or I don't even know if it's racism, but racism sort of couched in nationality. They don't like Koreans. Japanese don't like the Chinese, so on and so forth. Is it really that far down? Is it China centric or is it Asian centric?
It's China centric first, Asian centric second. I mean, if you're Asian, if you come to a market and they see an Asian face, if an Asian merchant sees an Asian face, they're going to automatically assume that that person's Chinese. If they don't speak Chinese, then they're not necessarily a foreigner, which is an unusual, you know, they just think they're Asian. There is a sort of a subtle racism, and it's hard to sort of explain it. The farther south you go, I guess it is, the more racist it becomes, the more they sort of look down upon people.
It's just, now you're a big guy. You're a tall guy, 6'3".
I'm not as big as you.
No, I got 2 inches on you, but you, I've always been told if I went to Asia, I'd be a giant over there.
Yeah, you would be.
Do you get that? You're not that.
Yeah.
You put on a pair of heels and you're a giant too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no question. I mean, it's just not the height. I'm big, you know, I don't have an Asian frame. I hate to say that, but I don't. I mean, I'm 225. You know, I'm built like a linebacker. I'm big. I'm a big guy, and the average Asian man is simply not my size.
Is there a curiosity about the United States there?
The Chinese word, the Mandarin word for United States is Meghwa, and Meghwa, it means beautiful country. I mean, they have a kind of a love for the country, our United States. They have an admiration for the United States. So it's sort of a strange, you know, a dichotomy between sort of distrusting our government, but also loving the country.
You were there during the Obama administration as well.
Yeah.
What has the attitude changed towards America, either in the media coverage or in the culture with president?
It's funny because they absolutely loved Obama. they call him Obama. They called him Obama, and they had shirts a lot of shirts with Obama with a Mao cap on, and they were sold all over the they were sold all over the streets. Obama.
Why is that? Because it seems like, yes, President Trump has been hard on trade, but he is he seems to have gone out of his way to, I guess he occasionally does blame the Chinese government for hiding things, hiding the outbreak at the beginning. But it is always couched in, my good friend, I like him, we're friends, we get along. He seems to be going out of his way to make it, you know, it's not personal, it's professional. Is there no separation between the two over there?
To me, it's kind of funny. I mean, every time when a European or anybody who's not American loves the American president, I tend to worry about the United States, because if the foreigners like our president, I figure our president's doing something wrong, because our country truly is different than the rest of the world. I mean, you know, we are individual centric first, you know, and government, you know, government's last. And so if our, if Europeans or Asians love our president, I can figure out, okay, why do they love him? So they loved Obama because he told them what they wanted to hear, but they actually do respect Trump. They actually do respect, and they actually, I have talked to a lot of Chinese people who actually agree with the fact that, you know, that Trump is, you know, trying to be strong. They actually respect strong leaders. So the average Chinese person loves Putin, for example. They think Putin's wonderful. Not necessarily because Putin's, it's just they respect his personality and the fact that they consider him a strong leader, that he's strong for his country. And so they actually respect that part of Trump in the same way. They, you know, they see that he's trying to stand up for the United States, and they don't necessarily disagree with his viewpoints. They do agree that, you know, America's getting ripped off a lot of times.
There is a push here in Congress that's, I hope it's going to have some kind of legs, to hold China accountable in some measured way, financially, whatever. Are you hearing any grumblings about that in the media? Like, how dare they? Or is there any reporting on the ideas that we've got to impose tariffs, we've got to maybe say screw you on the debt? Is there any sense of that, or are they still just in denial mode that this didn't happen here?
I haven't heard a single thing about that whatsoever. No acknowledgement that China is remotely responsible for this. There's nothing in the media here.
How about the idea that, because, you know, our supply chain is largely, especially for medical supplies and for pharmaceuticals, is in China. And there is a movement, a good idea, I think, to sort of insource as much of that as possible back to the United States. I can't imagine that is particularly popular over there.
I have not heard a single thing about that over here. It would not be popular, which is probably the reason why they haven't said anything. I agree with you. I think that'd be a good thing for the United States. I think there's a lot of, like, sort of critical infrastructure things that we've outsourced, which is kind of ridiculous because it puts us in a position, you know. But they have not commented on that whatsoever here.
So it's almost like it doesn't happen. It's not happening.
Right.
Nobody's talking about it. Right. The lastly here, Paul, the other thing that is getting a lot of attention here in the United States is the treatment of Muslims, the Uyghurs in particular, the rounding up, the concentration camps, prison camps, whatever it is. The government says, no, 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 they can go and come and go as they please. Is that even known in China, in Chinese media?
It is and it isn't. The Uyghur population is actually quite large. You know, they are not ethnically Chinese whatsoever. They're actually a Turkic people. They don't speak Mandarin. They're completely different people that just happen to be subsumed by the Chinese, you know, the country of China. But they are technically not China whatsoever. Islam is actually one of the few religions in China that's actually an official religion. You know, Roman Catholicism is not an official religion here, nor is Greek Orthodox or Russian Orthodox. You know, because of the fact that they have the infrastructure of the hierarchy, and Islam is actually a fairly respected religion. So the average Chinese person knows that the Uyghurs are a problem. That's how they view them, as a problem. But they don't know of the fact that a huge percentage of them are actually in concentration camps.
When you say they're known as a problem, what kind of problem?
Well, there's been a lot of terrorism by the Uyghurs, and again, there's a huge lockdown on the ability for these people to be able to get weapons. So what they typically do, I think in 2000, 13 or 14, there was a Uyghur attack in a city where they went, about 25 Uyghurs went into a subway and started hacking people with machetes. So what the Chinese government's response to that was to go into the towns where these guys were from and basically wipe the town out. They don't take any, they just wipe everybody out. They don't take any prisoners. They don't ask any questions. They just wipe them all out. And that's how they treat everybody here. You don't have any rights. And if you stand up to the government, you pay the price.
Have you ever been afraid for your safety?
I've never actually been afraid, and I'm a very passive guest here. I don't try to push the limits. Again, I'm big and I'm blonde. I can't hide, and yeah. I'm trying to be a good guest.
But these apps you have on your phone mean that the government is tracking you wherever you go.
They can track you wherever you go. I mean, every time I go into a hotel, I have to give them my passport. They know I have to register every time. Every night I sleep, I have to register where I sleep.
You really? Every single, like, you have to keep a diary of where I slept?
Yep, I do. I mean, the government does.
How often is that checked? Or is it all electronic?
It's electronic and they check. I know they check because when I came back from Shanghai into Beijing and they asked me where I was, they were able to tell me where I was before I told them where I was.
Is that creepy? I imagine that's a pretty creepy feeling.
It's creepy. It's creepy.
Are you a married guy?
I'm a married guy. Yeah. So grandfather, actually.
So your kids are grown. So they're not.
Most of my kids. Two of my kids are not. Cute. Yeah. My wife, we live in Virginia. I've got two grown kids with grandchildren, and I've got two who are living at home.
And so is your wife there with you in China?
No, she's not. She was here when we were the first time I was here, she was with us, but it was just a situation now where, it just with school and the time period, the age of the kids are, it doesn't work out this way. So I'm on my own here.
How is everybody feeling about having dad and grandpa in China at a time like this?
It's definitely weird. I think when I went here by myself at the beginning of this, they thought I was crazy. I was being told by a lot of my in-laws not to do it. And now that I'm here, I'm actually kind of feeling blessed because I'm one of the few people I know that actually I'm actually working and I'm employed, because a lot of my coworkers that I work with are now in the U.S. They're unemployed. So, I guess it was in hindsight was a good move.
How long are you going to be there for?
Probably another 9 months.
Jeez. And there's the possibility you won't be able to come back and visit your family, and your family won't be able to come back and visit you. How do you deal with that?
That is a weird thing. Yeah. I mean, typically I had a visa that basically every 60 days I had to come back to the U.S. At this point, I have a residency visa that allows me to stay here without having to come back until January. If I leave at this point, I can't come back. So I'm basically waiting. And the second they open that, the ability to travel freely between the two countries, I'll come back.
But your wife can't even go and visit you, right? No family can come and visit you.
That's true. No one can visit me.
Weird, weird times. Well, good luck. How did you discover the podcast, by the way?
And I saw you interviewed by someone else's podcast, and I thought, who is this guy? And I went and bought your book, Outrage Incorporated, and
I read the
book, and I went, man, I'm the guy, yeah. And then you were moving, and I offered to help you move, and you said, no, I'm good, and because I was nearby where you live.
I was not moving. That was the first time I ever paid movers was that time we moved, because like I remember moving last time. Like I loaded up that truck and I looked back at my empty one bedroom basement apartment. I said, how in the hell did I fit all that in there? Like if you paid me to put it back, I don't think it would have fit in the apartment. And I'm like, I'm not, my wife had just as much shit as I did, and it was a lot of books. And I'm like, I'm not moving this stuff. I'd rather pay. Well, I'm glad you did. And I appreciate you reaching out, and I'm glad you're okay.
And yeah,
I'm good. Are you in touch? How does it work? Do you when you get there, do you go to the American embassy and say, by the way, I'm here just in case I disappear? Do you kind of let the Americans know? Do you check in with the American embassy every once in a while?
I don't even know where the American Embassy is. I've never gone there.
It's crazy. Crazy. Well, you're a braver man than I am. So, Paul, Paul Anonymous, thank you for your time, and be safe out there and all that good stuff.
No, it was great talking to you, Derek.
That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend. Here's Quinn. Quinn, do you want to say the alphabet real quick?
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, M, N, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, and Z. Now I know my ABCs. Next time, won't you sing with me?
Very, very good. And for the sake of your ears, I will not sing with you next time, but I will happily sit silently and listen to you sing. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Have a great one. May the 4th will be with you always.